T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Herbie is fully vaccinated. He is fully healed. He is ready to work. Let's go!
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
What's it been like watching the Cubs so far? There are over 100 answers that Cubs fans gave. I'm going to read through a couple of them. This one from Chris. At this point, I wish I could say more of the same. That'd be welcome to what we're actually seeing. This is the worst this group has looked since their window opened. Offense is a complete disaster, and everything else is mediocre. They're no way a good team, never mind entertaining. Let's talk about that for a second. I think that the Cubs' margins to win are very slim, and it partially has to do with the way that the team is constructed. If we are to, as fans, look at what they are offensively, like the tweet said, this is what we're kind of used to from seeing from the Cubs, this group of Cubs. But before, they had excellent defense and pitching that would help to carry them. And now they have a rotation that has some guys that don't throw hard in it for the most part. And that's probably, unless those guys are really on it, if they're really on it, those guys are going to struggle to get people out consistently.
Make me a bicycle clown.
The start of the show has a different feeling to it if you are watching on Twitch. Although, if you're just chair dancing like I am, wherever it is that you are, whether it's in the car or at your desk, it's all good. Twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Welcome in. I am Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Check out your local Hyundai dealer and get yourself a fine automobile. Here's what we have planned for you today. Mark Grody is going to join me in the next segment. I am going to talk with him about the Bears. They made a move. They're going to bring back Deshaun Gibson, which I actually think is a really, like, it's one of the best moves that they've made in the offseason. I think he's been a really good player. So we'll discuss that, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about the draft, and then I'm going to let Grody on with his day. Maybe I'll ask him about the Cubs, too. He spent a lot of time working around the Cubs. Maybe I'll ask him about that. We do want to talk about the Cubs and this series loss to Atlanta and them getting destroyed in the finale. Like, it's so weird because Saturday you're like, okay, all right, I see it. And then Sunday it was like, nope, don't see it. Don't see it anymore. And if Kyle Hendricks is going to be this bad, you've got a significant problem. I guess we could write it off to the guy didn't feel well. He didn't maybe get a chance to really get himself fully prepared for the start. But it was Yakatao time for Atlanta in yesterday's game, and they had 4 home runs in an inning. It's not enjoyable for anyone at all. Clint Yates is going to join me at 12:40. We like to talk baseball with each other, but he was tweeting about the Super League, and I am an Arsenal supporter, and my team is supposedly going to the Super League too. So I thought that we would spend a few minutes talking about it. There doesn't seem to be anyone who likes the idea, like, except for the investors, who have American investors. So I'm going to ask Clinton how he feels about it, and we'll discuss it a little bit. So you're going to get a little bit of everything on the show today. You're getting Cubs conversation. If the White Sox game ends, like if the Red Sox stop scoring runs while we're on the air, we're going to talk about that too, because it was quite the disaster
for Lucas Giolito.
Grand opening, grand closing.
Yeah, you knew. You woke up early and you're like, oh, well, this game's over. That's too bad that this game is over. And the split doesn't feel very good after you sweep the doubleheader yesterday. And you're thinking, oh, you got the ace on the mound today. And Red Sox are like, no, you don't. Enjoy this Yakutal that's going to happen to him. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, Mark Grody is going to join me. I'm going to talk with him about the Bears, what's going on, the NFL draft. We got a great show for you, so stick around. I'm Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
For the score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago. Middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Double tight ends each side of the line. Snap back Lennon with time. Going to rifle the middle and it's broken up over the middle. Going for Tyler Eifert, and it's Tashawn Gibson on the breakup. Attaboy, Tashawn.
That highlight is courtesy of our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. One of the people that you hear on that broadcast is our guy, Mark Grody. He does an incredible job on the sidelines. He's also just a good man and thorough. We love having him on the show. He joins me now on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out there in Melrose Park on North Avenue. You can check it out for yourself at apford.com. Hello, Groats.
Hi, Lawrence. Thanks for the kind intro, as always. And I know we're going to talk Bears, so it is perfectly appropriate that I have been recently deluged with emails from the boss regarding our big Zoom meeting tomorrow, which will be to discuss our draft coverage. So all the heavy Dan Pompey and Hub Arkish and Chris Emma and you... Yours truly, we're all going to be part, and Joniak, and Thayer. It'll be an extravaganza of Zoomness of our draft coverage. It actually will appear, be presented on our sister station, WBBM, because one of our many teams here on the Score will be hogging up the airwaves that night. But yes, I am in character right now because I've been told to be ready for a big Zoom draft meeting tomorrow by the powers that be.
Okay, good. I like that. I like that you're going to be a part of our draft coverage, as you should be, as the person who covers this team for us here at the Score. You're on the beat. You know what's going on. I really like the Tashawn Gibson re-signing. This is the first time that they'll have the same safeties playing together in multiple years since 2018. So I really like this idea. I thought that he was a really good addition to what it is they want to do on the field. And from what you've said before, it seems like he's a pretty good addition to that locker room.
Very good addition to the locker room. He is a spirited guy, good locker room, good with the media, all of that stuff for whatever it's worth. But the main thing is the first part of what you were saying. One thing the Bears have done pretty well through the years is have the safety opposite of their star, Eddie Jackson. And maybe, and I know you mentioned 2018, that'd be Adrian Amos. I still think that Adrian Amos was the best combo platter with Eddie Jackson. He brought out the
Agreed.
Best in Eddie Jackson, right? I mean, he played the strong safety position and he was happy to do it and stay in his zone, right? So he was definitely a guy who worked well with Eddie Jackson better than Nahaha Clinton Dix came along. And he wasn't bad either. But he just played way too similarly in terms of position-wise to Eddie Jackson, and I don't know that he ever adjusted. So there wasn't a great chemistry between the two. They got along swimmingly, but the chemistry wasn't great. It wasn't awful, but now Tashaun Gibson comes along last year, and he did play well. And so I thought it was a terrific and imperative signing to, again, the big money is being hogged up by Eddie Jackson. The key part here with those two is that Eddie Jackson has a better year and that he tackles better and that he makes plays, which he simply didn't do last year. But I agree with you. The Gibson re-signing is good and it was needed.
You're so on point, too, when it comes to talking about how that position is how it's evolved. And Amos is he was perfect because he wasn't trying to be the free safety. He didn't have a background as a guy that was a free safety. You knew that he was going to come up and run support and make plays and make tackles. And I think that he's actually gotten a little, I'd have to check the statistics on it, but I think that he's actually gotten a little bit better in pass coverage. But what he provides for you is some leadership. And I thought it was a mistake to just kind of let him roll, but I get it. They didn't have the money to pay him what he was looking for, and the Packers did. And now you try to figure out, well, what's the right marriage for the safety position with Eddie Jackson? And to me, you got to have someone who is committed to stopping the run. And I felt that HaHa was willing, but it wasn't happening. That he threw himself at the ball carrier, but that's not really what he was. Like, he's closer in skill set to what Eddie Jackson is than what Adrian Amos is. And I think that Gibson is a good he's in between both of those guys. I think if you had him as your free safety, you would probably be happy. But if he's your strong safety and he understands his role and he's committed to the role, and that's what I think makes him so valuable. And I'm glad that they brought him back because he's committed to, he's not like, well, I'm going to go and get a free safety job somewhere else. He's like, I'm going to play this position that they asked me to play, and I'm going to come downhill on the ball carrier.
Yeah, and I think he's at a point in his career as well where he's willing to do what he has to do to be a starter on a good defense or on anybody's roster and play that part. He gets it at this point. Not like he's an old guy, but he's certainly a veteran in the NFL. So he is willing to be that guy. And I promise you the Bears would not have brought him back if he wasn't willing to be the guy that gets a little bit dirty. It's funny. I remember talking to HaHa Clinton Dix, like just one-on-one by his locker. It was stuff that was, I eventually made public. So I'm not out of school discussing it, but he hated the reputation that he had about with Green Bay, and then he played with Washington as well, about being a guy who is not willing to get dirty, to make the tackles. And then some of that crept up with the Bears as well. So it was something that he tried to undo, but I don't think he ever successfully did. Whereas, again, back to Adrian Amos. Adrian Amos is a guy, too, who when it's all said and done, you're going to look at Adrian Amos maybe even 4 years from now when he's played for like a decade and be like, man, that guy's had a hell of a career for a guy who was, a fourth? I think he was a fifth-round pick
fifth rounder,
Penn State. Yeah, like he's going to be that guy that, wow, this guy, he has done well for himself, keeping his head down and being willing to do the dirty work. But I think they have a guy in Gibson that is willing to do that and is finally maybe getting close to Adrian Amos territory in terms of being a good combo platter for Eddie Jackson.
How much work have you done as we get ready for the draft on day 2, 3 quarterbacks?
not a ton.
I'm just trying to find the Bears a quarterback, and I'm wondering if it's all right. Well, let me phrase it this way. Do you think it's more likely that the Bears trade up and try to get one of the 5 or 6, depending on which mock you're looking at, quarterbacks that'll probably go in the first round or maybe at the top of the second? Or do you think that they're going to look at other positional needs and then try to figure out a developmental quarterback later on?
I think the only way that they would trade up is if somebody surprisingly gets passed up early on. And I'm not talking about Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson or Justin Fields. Like somebody like a Mac Jones, if he slips through – you know, somewhere like 7 or 8, maybe the Bears would start to sniff that out and see what kind of a deal they could get done with the 20th overall pick right now. I think that's the only way they would do that. But we don't know what Ryan Pace has in mind. I mean, he has not given us anything yet in terms of what he might be thinking about or who he's zeroing in on. We know he probably has zeroed in on somebody, but some of these other guys like Kyle Trask and Jamie Newman and Kellen Mond might be there and might be available. But there's been other years too where we had assumed I thought the Bears would draft a quarterback last year. I think a lot of us thought they would, and I said it for the same reasons that I would say it this year. It's a pretty last year, and you could say it for this year too. It's a pretty good situation to develop a quarterback because you do have an adequate guy in Andy Dalton. Nick Foles still on the roster, so whomever you bring in, I wouldn't think there would be that pressure that there seemed to be on Mitch Trubisky when they drafted him, and then all hell broke loose because Mike Glennon was shockingly bad. Hopefully you wouldn't have that same predicament. So it's tough to say, man. If they keep 20, I don't think they'll take a quarterback. I think it will be either an offensive lineman, or I wouldn't be shocked if they selected a cornerback because of Kyle Fuller, you know, having bolted the Bears. So it's everything's up in the air, and I'm looking forward to talking to Pace and Nagy because we'll get to talk to them again soon. I'm sure we'll get an announcement soon on when we get to talk to them prior to the draft.
Well, how about next week you come back on the show and we do like a full-fledged, like, old-school Bears draft preview?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah, we could draft for them. We could get all the names, and I don't know if you want to go
back. Yeah.
We could do this. I am totally down with it. Yeah, that'll be practice for the big draft show coming up on the
29th. It will be practice for the big draft show that'll be on Thursday. Groats, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Lawrence. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Bars. That is Mark Rohde. He covers the Bears for us here on The Score and does a terrific job of it. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, I want to talk about the Cubs and their lost weekend against Atlanta. I want to talk about that incredible series between the Dodgers and the Padres. And I want to talk about the Super League. Clint Yates from The Undefeated is going to join me to discuss all of those things next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Oh, man. Okay. So, look, Clint Yates is a guy who loves baseball. He's out here. Before the season began, he put out a video that just, if you were a baseball fan, like, you were ready for baseball when Clinton was talking about it. He also is a guy that likes and understands a little footy, and there is a huge international story going on with soccer. So I was like, you know what? We could just combine the conversation. We're capable of doing that. Clint Yates writes for The Undefeated. He's one of the most talented people that I know. And he is joining me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford out in Melrose Park has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. You can check it out at apford.com. Clinton, what's happening, dude?
What's going on, man? So listen, I want to start with baseball because I have a question for you, which is this. Do you think the Cubs are a good team that's not performing, a team that is not well constructed, or a bad team? I say that because the Yankees, in my opinion, just as a comparative point, are a team that I think is poorly constructed. They can only hit home runs, for lack of a better term, and when they don't, they're not going to win. However, I don't know, for those of you who don't know, the Cubs are not a national story, and I'm not going in and out on 9 innings with them. I'm not necessarily sure what the actual issue is with them, and I'm asking you to explain that to me.
Okay. I think that the way that you frame that is really interesting, and I was like, where do I lean? I don't think that they're a bad team, so I'm going to eliminate that. I do think that some of their issues are construction, and we can go back to them moving away from Yu Darvish And right now, I mean, Darvish is still, I think, going to be one of the better pitchers for at least the next two seasons in the National League. And yeah. And it felt like a money dump. Like, that's what it felt like to Cubs fans, that the ones that call and text here, it felt like the Ricketts family kind of moving away from a player because of their salary. And then you look at the way that their rotation is constructed, Clinton. It's a bunch of guys that don't throw hard. And I'm all for the art of pitching. Like, I'm down for the art of pitching. But you do need to be able to speed up some bats so that you can get guys off balance. And when you look at them, I think that Jake Arrieta has been really solid so far. I've enjoyed watching him come back to the Cubs. But if Kyle Hendricks isn't money, if he isn't money, they're going to struggle to win games. And in two of his three starts, he's given up a whole bunch of runs and a whole bunch of homers. So I think that there's some good in there, but I don't know if we're going to see it play out. The only what I will say, though, I'm super happy for Chris Bryant. Bryant has been hitting the ball. He looks like himself. And I thought that might be enough to spark the rest of their offense. And there's plenty of time. There's still, 147 games or whatever left in the season. But that's kind of where I stand. I think it's encouraging that Chris Bryant is hitting.
The reason I bring it up, Loho, is because you can't, first of all, almost every team in the Bigs has a guy throwing a hundo these days at some point in their staff. So you definitely can't win a bunch with a gang of soft tossers. But the number two thing is that it's interesting you mentioned the Bryant point, because I sort of feel like the Cubs are in this situation not dissimilar to where the Nats are, where it's sort of like, listen, after these championship runs, what are you doing sort of the next day of the rest of your life kind of situation? You know what I mean? Like, and for the Cubs, from an identity standpoint, I really wonder what that's going to be if they're out here dumping salaries and not actually being that competitive. It is that part of the story is interesting to me nationally as a non-Chicago resident.
Well, let me ask you before – I don't want to stay in the misery that is the Cubs, because I have plenty of time to do that in the 1 o'clock hour. But I want to ask you, as someone who loves the game the way that you do, how fun was this weekend between the Dodgers and the Padres?
Let me explain something to you. Okay, so there is this mindset amongst L.A. fans and Dodger fans that because the Padres are the Padres, that there is nothing to be acknowledged until the Padres win something. Let me explain something to you as well. Last year, when Trent Grisham backflipped, Trent Grisham of no exact MLB fame, backflipped on the Dodgers, and they went insane about it, I was like, oh, the Dodgers have lost the psychological battle to the Padres, even if they're a better baseball team. So by the time this season came around, and I'm turning this thing on, it is playoff intensity P1. I was like, whoa. These teams do not like each other, and I love to see it. Mookie Betts out here making grabs, literally beating his chest. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the best baseball series I'd seen clearly since last season, but I don't know that I saw a series that good in the regular season last season either. It's been a ton of fun. The objects in the NL West mirror are closer than they appear for the Dodgers, and that's good for everybody.
I like that there's some bad blood, too. I like that it's got – it's got some sandpaper to it. Like, the two teams don't like each other, and it plays out on the field.
I do, too. And it's not necessarily, it's not a bad thing. It makes teams better. That's the main thing about it, is that to me is how baseball, should be played. You should have some vocal opinions. You should be able to, you're not fighting, but hey. Sometimes things get a little testy. Gentlemen have to trade recipes. These things happen on the baseball diamond. And so for me, I like it all. Dave is talking about it, as in Dave Roberts. It's just, it's the best rivalry. And yes, I'm going to call it a rivalry. I don't need everybody to have championships for these teams to be rivals, I think, right now in baseball.
Clinton Yates of The Undefeated joining me here on The Score. What do you make of this Super League story?
Oh, bro. Okay, so without getting too far into the long-winded geopolitics of how soccer relates to the rest of the globe from an economic standpoint, I'll just say it plainly this way. I don't know who's going to want to watch a club league in which the players in the club league are not potentially going to scale up to play nationally for their own countries in the World Cup or in continental tournaments. That, to me, is the fundamental issue with all of this. You can get upset about the money grabs and sort of the notion that, like, people in England aren't going to be able to necessarily watch their favorite teams play against the lower teams that the whole entire structure of soccer was built upon. But I think the larger question is, for the casual fan, a lot of people don't actually care about club soccer. You know what I mean? They use it as a tool to inform them who's going to be playing in the big tournaments because, hello, the World Cup is the biggest event in the world. So if you forcibly separate those two because you're arguing over money, that's a huge issue that really fundamentally messes up the entire developmental structure of what soccer even is on a global scale. And that, to me, is almost like unthinkable if you're going to start talking in those, you know, kind of numbers. And so beyond the fact that the Super League kind of kills its own it kills its own exclusivity by only playing against one another, I just can't envision a world in which all the best players in the world are not playing in the biggest tournament in the world, the World Cup. That's insane to me.
I thought it was interesting in the release where they said, you know, we're really hoping to hook up with FIFA and UEFA and work through some of these problems. And it seems like the answer from the other side is like, nah, fam, there's not going to be any reckoning that goes on here. Either this isn't going to work. And I think that, Clinton, honestly, like, the geopolitical economic side of this, I think, is important. And the history of like English Premier League soccer is important too. I saw a really good meme of, you know, started as someone had said in England, like, started by the poor and now taken over by the rich when it comes to the dollars. And I don't think that the fact that there's a lot of American money involved in this, I think that that's a significant portion of this too.
It's a massive portion of this. When NBC got the contract for the Premiership so many years back, what I'm about to say is not a critique of the network or even the job that they've done. Those of us who do care about this kind of stuff, global citizens who have been paying attention for a lot longer than just when NBC showed up, were very concerned that the insertion of the American market as a power player was going to push this kind of crap. We've seen it in England with what we call, on the competitive level, oil money minutes, which is a terrible thing to say, to be quite frank, but a lot of these big teams get extra time in games to try to tie and win games because the assumption is the league and the people involved want them to do better. The weird extension of that is that for American fans who don't have any actual connectivity to the teams, they've just effectively picked who their favorites are. If you're leaning towards sort of pleasing them, you're messing up the whole reason you exist to begin with. So when some guy in Topeka is yelling at, come on, you Spurs, at me, I'm like, what is even going on here? Why would you want to cater to that market? And the concern was that once the American fan commoditized what that was, became a huge deal, they were going to just ruinously take it to the nth degree. And I think that's what this Super League represents. There are retail markets for fans that exist at a high, high level for so many different European clubs that if you decide you just don't want to operate within the internal structure of soccer, well, then maybe you could get away with it financially. Maybe it could be viable. But what you can do is not always what you should do. And in this case, I think that's an exact example of that. You cannot get away from the fundamental structure that is club and country at least being in some level of joint operation, because that's your motivation. You can't undercut the World Cup like that, never mind the continental tournaments, which are, in fact, my favorite tournaments on earth. I just don't like it. I mean, it's not a good idea. It's boring to me, you know, and it's a money grab. And that, for me, is what the issue is. It's not even about who the clubs are necessarily specifically.
Yeah, it's very bare on how connected this is to the cash of it. And I know that you were trying to make it easy for people and do comps. And I think you did the NCAA as a comp. What do you think? I saw someone else bring this up. This is the AFL, but it already has like established teams there's no good American comp, but I was trying to think of what might be a comp for this.
The comp that I can come up with, if we're going to talk about the relationship in the terms of the competition, and I'll restate what you just pointed out, it's the reason why it doesn't work for most pro sports is because the global factor is what's important here. You're talking about all of Europe when we're dealing with UEFA. You're talking about the feeder systems from the different associations globally that operate, again, toward the World Cup. In the Americas, these leagues are already closed leagues that are only operating from within one country. So from a competitive standpoint, here's what it's like. Let's just say all the blue bloods in basketball and football in the NCAA, D1, decided that they were just going to make another conference strictly for those sports. If the NCAA looked at that and turned around and said, hey, guess what? How about none of your sports can compete in the NCAA at any of your schools? All of a sudden, you've got a bunch of kids that are kind of not exactly playing for nothing, but it's a completely different competitive market for why anybody would want to play in that at that school to begin with, you know? And that's the closest comp I can think of. It's obviously totally different because of the way the money works for student athletes and, you know, so on and so forth. But if Duke and North Carolina and all these other teams decide that they want to start playing in a different league for basketball, but for whatever reason, they can't play, I don't know, NC State anymore or Wake Forest because they're not in it, that's just weird. You know, that messes with the fundamental idea of why people like this stuff. You can't do things that people don't think are fun just because you can make more money and expect to succeed. You know, that's kind of the ultimate deal here. It's sports. It's fun. Let the people have the fun the smartest way they can and allow it to be the most accessible. The Super League in Europe is sort of the least accessible, most private, most rich, most top-notch way to do it. And that's just not that cool to me, basically.
That's Clinton Yates. He is fantastic. He's a force. You should be following him on Twitter, at Clinton Yates. You should be reading him in The Undefeated for sure. Sir, I thank you for the time and the education.
Absolutely, sir. Talk soon. Stay safe out there, Loho.
I'll do my best. That is Clinton Yates. He's great. I'm glad that we had a few minutes to kind of talk about. I'm telling you, man, like, I know that, look, this is a local show that comes out of Chicago, and we are mostly focused on things that are happening in and around Chicago, but this Super League story is huge, and it has been met with an abundance of this sucks. So I wanted to give at least a few minutes to talk about it, and I thought that Clinton did a great job of kind of explaining all of it. We're going to talk Bulls. We're going to talk Cubs. Deion Miller joins me next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.